welcome back for a new episode of Design Cafe, where we like to have candid and deep conversations about UX design. We share about our thoughts and experience working as a designer in the tech industry. In this fourth season, we've decided to challenge ourselves by discussing some difficult taboo topics. So we'll cover things like mental health at work, dealing with toxic workplaces, and the challenges of career progression. Basically, topics that make you a bit uncomfortable to talk about, but are really important as they impact us all. I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
And I'm your co-host, Susan.
We intend to release a new episode every couple of weeks on a Friday. And in the meantime, if you'd like to hear a bit more about us, you can find us on Twitter at Design Cafe or on LinkedIn on Design Cafe. And we also have a website at designcafe.com. And if you'd like to support the podcast a little bit further, you can leave us a review on your podcast platform. And you can also buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com/designcafe. All right, so in today's episode, we decided to talk about the stigma that is kind of around taking time off from work for mental health. Usually, it's quite acceptable and well seen to take time off when you're a bit sick or you need to take time off for bigger physical health reasons. But often it feels like even though your company might be all right with you taking a time, a day off for your mental health, it still is a little bit uncomfortable usually to say, hey, I'm taking a day off because I just really don't feel like it today. So we're going to dive a little bit into that, and also talk about what happens when you have even bigger mental health issues like burnout, depression, these sort of things that can really get in the way of you just getting, you know, going to work and functioning at work, basically, and needing the time to rest. So Susan, maybe to get started, why do you think, and I'm going to start with a big question, why do you think there is this discomfort around saying that you're taking time off for mental health reasons?
I think it's different reasons for different people. I suppose it depends on your own relationship to mental health, but just in broad strokes, speaking very generally, there, as you know, as we've outlined in the title of this episode or the intro of it, there is a historical stigma around talking about mental health. It's getting a lot better, but in my opinion, talking about mental health is not on the same footing or on the same level as talking about physical health just yet. And so mental health is still a little bit taboo. I think it also depends on the extent to which it's stigmatized and tabooized does depend on the culture and the environment as well. I think there are certain cultures. I'm going to be stereotyping extremely, but, you know, let's say broadly in more traditional conservative environments and cultures, maybe it's a bit more taboo to talk about mental health. And in more, let's say, progressive environments, it might be a bit easier to talk about mental health. But yeah, there is this historical mental health stigma that we're still grappling with. It's certainly, I'm showing my age now, I guess, but I remember growing up and being a teenager, and also early in my 20s, it was still, mental health was still a bit like, oh yeah, you know, a bit hush hush. And if someone was off university or work because of, you know, some kind of ambiguous mental health situation, it was kind of whispered about or talked about in a quite uncomfortable way. And people don't do that if someone breaks a leg and takes time off because they've broken a leg, because it's so obvious why they're taking time off because they've broken a leg. And I think that obviousness is what makes it so much easier to take time off because of some physical illness compared to a mental illness or a mental condition. It's so much more obvious when you're physically ill. If you've broken a limb or you're getting treatment for something physical, or you're just very, if you have a cold and you're snotty and you're sneezy and you're coughing, it's very obvious that you're ill, and also you're probably contagious if you have a cold. So it's just, it's so much more straightforward, whereas mental health is a lot more invisible, of course. So yeah, it's those two things. It's the historical stigma and the fact that mental health is a lot less tangible. And in combination, I find that that makes it so much less common to talk about mental health and to take time off of mental health, and it makes it more uncomfortable for some people to maybe, yeah, say things like, I'm feeling off today, I'm physically fine but mentally struggling a bit, so I'm just going to take some time off.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the stigma around it. I think for me it's also that, as you said, it's kind of a silent, invisible types of symptoms that people don't really see. And also, I think there's a perception around it that is very negative. Like, if you feel, oh, I'm feeling off today, some people are just going to be like, well, they're going to perceive it as laziness, or, I don't know, just something that isn't very, like, understanding of what actually feeling off means. Like, sometimes feeling off really means that you have zero energy to get out of bed, or I don't know, like, it can actually go quite far, but I think some people perceive it as, yeah, you're just being lazy and you should just get over it. There's a misunderstanding around how much mental health can really block you from going about your usual day, and how it can really impact your productivity and also just your relationship at work. And, you know, even the team, you know, I think sometimes you're just not really there. You're just not going to be in a positive mood. You're just not going to be proactive. And yeah, sometimes it's just better to take time to rest and then just come back, obviously refreshed and better. And I think sometimes people don't understand that need to rest, take a step back, is really important to be able to actually come back and have positive productivity in the next few days. So yeah, I think there's this whole perception of it being just coming from a laziness from the individual. And I think that's a shame, because it's often very, very, very far from being that. And often you can't really help it. Sometimes you have anxiety, depression, like panic attacks, all of these kind of things that just really get in the way of you just doing basic life stuff, and let alone doing work and facing meetings with colleagues and all of that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, especially around that misconception as well, because the thing about mental health is, a lot of the time, there are sort of early signs of mental health issues that might be worsening over time or could get worse later. Early signs like, you know, you're feeling less motivation one day, or just feeling a bit fed up or irritable or whatever. By early signs, I mean you're not so ill and mentally, or feeling so mentally not well yet that you can't function. You could probably still work, but there's some early signs of, there's something coming up. Maybe it's an early burnout symptom, or maybe you have some early signs of anxiety, or, you know, those sort of things. And I think there's this misconception sometimes that I'm taking this to the extreme, but you're only allowed to take time off for mental health if you've gone so far that you have a panic attack, or you have an anxiety attack, or you have a diagnosis, and anything before that is just, as you say, laziness, or you're not feeling super 100%, but you could still work. Whereas, in my opinion, I think the earlier you catch those signs and take a break and rest, the less likely those early signs are to turn into something worse. And so that's better for both the individual and for the productivity of the team and the company.
I mean, absolutely. Just like, you know, you would get early physical signs for physical illness, you also will for mental illness too. And it's, yeah, I agree. Often they get overlooked and shoved under the rug, I guess. And sometimes it can get really serious. It can get to burnout, which, you know, makes you unable to work for many months, even more sometimes at a time. So that is definitely not somewhere where you want to get to, both from a business or individual perspective. So yeah, I agree. It's very important to catch those early signs and just value prioritizing yourself as well. I actually had a colleague once saying, being really open, that she was taking mental health days. And it was the first time I saw someone doing that. And I thought I was really brave. And she actually posted on Slack saying, hey, you know, like yesterday I took a mental health day and that's okay. You can say that you had one of those instead of disguising as a usual sick day. And, you know, I thought that was super brave of her. Weirdly, even though she said that, I still felt quite uncomfortable at the idea of me doing that for myself, which really shows to what extent the stigma sticks to you. And it's like there's a feeling of shame almost that comes with it. And I don't particularly know how to get rid of it, if that makes sense.
I completely see what you mean. Especially when you reflect on her being brave as well, which she is, but I'm saying but as if something bad's coming up. In an ideal world, right, we should react to people saying I'm taking a day off because my depression is bad or whatever. We should react to that in the same way as someone saying I'm taking a day off because I have the flu. It's like, okay, yeah, look after yourself. We don't, when someone tells us I have the flu, I'm taking a day off, we don't think, oh wow, that's so brave of you. So it's, I guess I'm trying to say, like, we want the end goal to be that we have the same, oh yes, of course, like, take a day off reaction to mental health issues as physical health issues. But we can't just jump to that end goal immediately. We all have to kind of go through this, these baby steps to get there. And so, yeah, I notice myself that I also, when people that tell the wider team or the close-knit team that they're taking time off because of some mental health issue, I also notice that I'm like, oh wow, that's really, you know, yeah, that's brave of them. And then I catch myself things like, but why do you think that's brave of them? Like, of course they should be able to do that. I mean, it is brave, but yeah, you know, so you're kind of, I'm struggling with, not struggling, but I'm kind of noticing this internal, almost like cognitive dissonance myself, like, this should be natural. Of course that person should be able to do that. But at the same time, it's, yeah, maybe it's like internalized stigma in myself, or it's, the novelty of it, that I'm still getting used to the fact that taking time off for mental health should be normalized and common.
Yeah, I mean, probably a part of it is due to the internalized stigma, as you said. I think there's also, I mean, don't get me wrong, physical health issues are also incredibly personal, but I feel like with mental health, it really touches to, I don't know, it touches areas of your life that are very personal. Like, sometimes mental health issues, they come up because of things that have nothing to do with work. You know, it can be things that you've gone through in your life years before. And it's just things that you're still working through. And I feel like because sometimes these are linked to these kind of things, it feels incredibly touchy to talk about those things. Like, for me, I really struggle. I mean, it has happened to me in the past to take a sick day disguised as a mental health day disguised as a sick day, physical sick day. And you know, like, you often have your colleagues coming back and asking you, oh, like, are you okay? What did you have? And often in those moments, I feel so bad because I'm like, so now basically, either I say something incredibly personal, like, yeah, I just couldn't get out of bed yesterday, or like, I was in my head the whole day ruminating about stuff that are really personal, or I just tell you that I had a really bad cough, or like something like that, which seem a lot more mainstream, I guess, or like more banal, if that's a word in English. Means kind of just normal. So yeah, I think and by doing that as well, I intensify the sense of shame, because then I'm like, oh, why am I lying to my colleagues? But then also, I just don't feel like I can say that I just had a mental health day, because then for me it opens that can of worms of like, but why? And then what's going on with Sandrine? And then is she okay? And then like, and then for me it opens that that area where I think in healthy cultures, don't get me wrong, and I should probably give a lot more credits to my colleagues because I don't actually think they would do that, but I think there's that fear that your ability to be trusted at work is also going to be put in question. I think a lot of you know, the perception that we give at work is based on confidence, your resilience, your ability to be able to face challenges on the go and, you know, be able to kind of be there. And I think when you face those kind of mental health issues on some days, it kind of fades that image of you. Or at least for me, my perception, there's a fear that people are going to think that I'm less reliable, less resilient, which is probably silly because if anything, actually, it builds your resilience to go through these things through life. But I think there's a fear around that.
I think that fear, sadly, that fear is founded sometimes. Like, I think, you know, as much as we'd like to think that fear is completely irrational and there is no negative perception of your ability to perform if you take time off for mental health issues, I've actually observed, and this is really sad, and I'm going to be quite relatively candid, but I've observed the most progressive, let's call it woke leaders, the most, you know, feminist, etc., anti-racist, etc., or explicitly feminist, anti-racist, etc., leaders negatively judge candidates, for example, who are interviewing for a job because those candidates are writing very openly on platforms like LinkedIn or Twitter about, for example, their struggles with mental health, which, yes, writing about these things on social is them being vulnerable and putting themselves out there. It's important that they do it, I think, because it gives visibility to these issues like anxiety and depression and so on. But I've observed on close hand that these very, again, progressive leaders whose opinions on the surface I very much agree with, I've observed them say things like, "Oh, yeah, I'm not so sure about this candidate because, you know, it's maybe they're off sick a lot, or maybe they're, you know, can we rely on them to show up every day at work?" And that's the element as well. Like, should we rely on people to show up every day at work? Who shows up 100% every day at work? And if you do, is that good or are you a machine?
Ticking bomb.
yeah, exactly. And are you just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to overgeneralize and say that everyone has problems, but everyone has problems. As in, so like, if I don't know, I struggle with this notion that even the most seemingly capable, highly performant people don't have something brewing under the hood. And there are people who, we talked about these early warning signs earlier, there are people who kind of are more in tune with those early warning signs and are a bit more aware of them and kind of monitor them a bit closer. And then there are people who don't. And yeah, maybe they are ticking bombs, as you say. So anyway, all this to say, I do feel like the wider industry or society, maybe even to a certain extent, do consciously or subconsciously assume that maybe you're not as performant. sounds like you're a robot or a machine, but you're maybe not as performant if you vocalize that you do have struggles.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are leftovers from a very patriarchal society that we are still you know, progressing on. You know, don't stew on your emotions, just move on, just, you know, like kind of these sort of like sayings of like, just ignore and move forwards.
And keep calm and carry on.
yeah, exactly. And as we know, these things don't work because eventually they end up actually in generally quite negative outcomes for either the individuals or people around them. So So yeah, but I think we're still learning to unpack what these things that we've learned, you know, and kind of taken as granted. Now I think we're dismantling them slowly, but I think they are still very pervasive throughout our practices at work and throughout our culture. So I think it's going to take us a while to unpack all of it. But in the meantime, we are still suffering from it, unfortunately. I think the company Unmind is actually doing also a lot of work around bringing mental health awareness at work. I mean, their whole vision for their product is really around that. And they have a really interesting little tool on their website, actually, where you can give the amount of employees your company has, and they give you a statistic around how many people are likely suffering from mental illness, how much it's likely to cost your business, because actually it's an invisible cost, and often it's disguised through a physical illness, sick days, these kind of things, like, or lower productivity. You know, there's a lot of ways that mental health impacts employees and businesses throughout the year. And I think they're trying to raise awareness around that so that actually businesses kind of start investing and making it a thing that it's okay to talk about. And yeah, I think there's still obviously a long way to go, but thankfully there are some things changing in the right way. So yeah.
I'm going to ask you a bit of a tricky question, but it's just something that I ponder sometimes, because I'm a bit of a emotional oversharer, if I can call it that. I think I've just developed this habit of sort of oversharing, quote unquote, oversharing how I'm feeling in a work context. And we talked about, the two of us have talked about like our discomfort with this concept of professionalism at work before, and, you know, how it's important to be human at work. So yeah, just for context, I'm the type of person who, you know, if someone asks me, hey, how are you doing at work? And also, by the way, this is a cultural thing in lots of lots of European countries, like this whole hi, how are you, good, thanks, how are you, this thing is a bit foreign. So when people ask me how I am, I answer by saying how I am, because that is the question. So if I'm not feeling great, then I'll say I'm not feeling great. I won't go into like a super long, you know, detailed description of exactly how I'm feeling, but in the same way, I was like, hey, how are you doing? And if I have a cold, and I'll be like, okay, I'm not feeling great, I have a cold. Or, hey, how are you doing? I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling a bit anxious today because this project is stressing me out and it's overwhelming me a bit. You know, like, I'll just say something very short about it. It's not necessarily an invitation to like turn it into a therapy session, because work isn't therapy, but it's just I'm being very transparent, I suppose, about how I'm doing. And some of the practices I've tried to put into place, if I'm leading a team, for example, in the past, is to open group settings and open spaces by doing rounds of how we're feeling. And my intention with that is to kind of unearth or create a shared understanding of the emotional vibe and emotional temperature of the team, instead of assuming that all team members come to a meeting or come to a workshop all like 100% super productive, well rested. I want to like make sure that people are aware that maybe, oh, that person isn't feeling, you know, 100% and stuff like that. So in a work context, I feel like, compared to a lot of other people, this depends on the culture, but compared to a lot of other people, I am a bit more ready to just say how I'm feeling, even if I'm feeling a bit shit, and even if that shit is very mental and not physical. And so my maybe tricky question to you is, where is the line between being appropriately vulnerable and open about how you're feeling in a work context and oversharing? Like, is there a line? There probably is a line. And where do you draw it? Like, how do I know when I'm oversharing and like telling people things they don't need to know, versus telling people just enough so that they are aware that maybe I'm not feeling 100% today, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think usually when you're oversharing, you can see that the person in front of you is uncomfortable. So I think probably that's the first cue. So I think, again, being aware of the room, I guess, is super important. I think for me, I have my radar always up anyway of like to not overshare. So by default, I will share less than oversharing anyway. But I think for me, it's about choosing the right context as well. I think if it's a colleague that you work closely with, you have a good relationship, they have been vulnerable in front of you, you have been able to be vulnerable in front of them before, then, you know, absolutely, like, why not? Especially if you're in a one-to-one setting, sometimes, like, a good vent between colleagues, actually, I think is so important every now and then. Like, I know that some people feel like they can be a bit counterproductive because they can raise the negativity a bit. But actually, I think emptying your bag sometimes is so needed to then actually take a step back and be like, okay, we emptied our bag, but actually, all in all, things are not so bad here. Like, so I think it's like kind of, finding the right context, the right person. I think if it's in a workshop and you start oversharing about how you're feeling with people that don't know you very well and you're clearly like, I don't know, delaying get work started or making people uncomfortable, then yeah, you've probably entered waters that were not, you should not have gone to probably. But I feel like usually we are quite good at picking those clues up. I think if you stop picking those up, it means that you've probably entered stage of mental distress that is a bit too high, and then that's really probably when you should take time to rest. I have seen some people at work sometimes getting into those waters, and that's because they were really overwhelmed. And sometimes when you're really overwhelmed, you just really can't help it. And it just starts flowing. But yeah, I think for me, it's just choosing your work, the context, the person, not also feeling that you should never open up. I think you can create amazing friendships at work, and actually becoming friends with your colleagues can help, you know, creating better team bonding and trust and better team work cohesion in the future. So I think, you know, it's totally fine to let them know that you're super stressed out about something. And actually, sometimes you'd be surprised by your colleagues might be like, you know what, like, it's no big deal, let me handle that part. Because for them, it might be it might be absolutely nothing for them compared to you, for example. And that has happened to me in the past where I told a colleague I'm super anxious about that. And she says, don't sweat it. It's really no big deal for me. I'll take care of it. And then, you know, in return, sometimes it swaps, and it's something that stresses that person out that I can actually handle. And sorry, it's a very like weird answer to your question. I think, again, you know, I would qualify you as brave to actually answer how you actually are doing when people are asking you how you're doing. Because I think the default for most people is to just say, yeah, I'm fine, when actually they are not fine at all. So again, I know we shouldn't qualify as being brave, but I think there is some element of courage there.
Yeah, I think these cultural changes happen when they happen on multiple levels. So in kind of intimate, close one-to-ones, and also smaller group settings, but also from the leadership level, it's important that you have that sense of openness and transparency. And I mentioned this a lot before, but some of the best cultures, emotionally aware and resilient cultures I've been in a work setting, have been the ones where leadership are very open about their own emotional struggles or emotional situations, let's say. Not to the point of oversharing. This is also why I'm quite impressed. They're not, you know, using all hands to go on a full-on meltdown about what's going on, but they're in a very capable what's the word, sort of I don't know, leadership-esque way. They're very open about for example, some personal things that are happening without going too much into detail, but just enough so that the rest of the company understands that, okay, you know, there's something happening here that influences how present they are, how available they are, for example.
I find that often some leaders are able to talk about mental health, often from things from the past, to say how it, why it's important to them as a topic. And that's often really, really helpful. I guess they have more perspective on it because it's something that happened in the past. They can put distance and they can just tell you about their learnings. Often the learning being mental health is important. I haven't actually seen as many leaders actually expressing ongoing mental health issues. And I guess sometimes it might be because sometimes you don't even have the words for it yet, or even the awareness that you're going through it sometimes. Sometimes you need some time to assess that.
Or it could be situational. So for example, a kind of very obvious and very common, I suppose, example of a less mental, more maybe physical, situational issue that I've heard and seen leaders often come with, is, for example, my child is off sick, or my child broke their leg, so I'm going to take some time, or I'm not going to be as available, you know, and everyone understands that. That's, you know, that's like almost like a physical, physical condition. But it could also be, for example, a leader saying, my father has cancer, and so that is taking a lot of my mental energy and my focus, and I'm, you know, not going to be completely as present as your leader in the coming weeks while my family works through this. And that's enough, you know, that's, we understand that, we have empathy as a company to understand that. So it's more these situational things maybe, rather than their very direct personal struggles. But of course we have the empathy to understand that a situation like someone's father going through a terminal illness or something like that does affect them in the present moment. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say with this. I suppose it has helped me tremendously to just see these things being verbalized and communicated from that level, and to just very matter-of-factly acknowledge that life happens and things that happen in life affect your presence and focus at work, and that's okay because we're all human, as we've talked about.
I think for me the big lesson here is that throughout your company you should practice compassion. I think I saw that from an author on LinkedIn. I can't even remember who that was, but I think it may actually have been the ex-CEO of LinkedIn who wrote a few articles around how practicing compassion and prioritizing compassion at work is actually really important. Because I guess it applies beyond just mental health matters, really. But I think if you practice compassion, then, you know, then you actually try to seek to understand why the other party is going through something, why they're feeling that way. How can you help? How can you support? And it goes both ways, whether you're at the top or the bottom. And actually, I think that's very important that the top knows how to practice compassion, because often they don't make themselves look vulnerable. And that's often when the divide with the bottom layer really increase dramatically, because actually there's no more emotional communication to some extent. So I think sometimes leaders will act in a manner that can, I guess, look like they're not prioritizing the well-being of their staff or something like that. And actually what people don't know is that they have X amount of challenges to face, which means that, you know, they're deciding to preserve this part of the business over another one so that it actually benefits, I don't know, the wider business and the wider staff, for example. I don't know, like something like that. But if they don't talk about it, and if they don't talk about the challenges and how hard it can be, you know, either for them as individuals or how the situation is just tricky and that decision making is really tough, and they've had to make some calls that they wish they didn't have to make, but they had to make calls, for example. If they don't share about those things, then it's very easy for people to just be like really annoyed, because I guess they don't have clarity. And I guess that's why sharing over what you're going through is so important. It's because you invite people in to understand And it also rationalizes sometimes why you've been behaving in a particular way. And yeah, I found that if we were to do that a bit more, maybe it would actually help relationships overall, and it will help us make us feel more safe to share in general.
What I do find a bit more common, I don't know about you, I don't know what your reflections are on this, but I'll just share my reflection. What I find a bit more common is that I'm in an environment where we try to work towards a very, let's say, mental health aware and mental health inclusive environment. We have the people function organizing mental health awareness activities. We have regular, for example, you know, mindfulness activities. Several places I've worked at yoga and these sort of things. So, you know, we're explicitly, from a cultural point of view, trying really hard as a company to be more aware of mental health issues. And leaders, design managers and leaders in those organizations might explicitly encourage us to take time off for mental health and all of those things. So it's on the surface level, it looks like a company that is very embracing of, for example, taking time off for mental health. But what I'm observing very often is that said leaders in those companies never actually take time off for mental health themselves, so they don't practice what they preach. Or they could, but they're not making that very visible. And so my issue with this is, I don't know if in those environments the company culture or the leadership is just trying to do the right thing, but they're not fully embracing these principles of you know, introspection and being aware of your own emotional well-being themselves, and actually taking time off for mental health themselves, or if those leaders just simply never need to take time off for mental health. That could be the case as well. I suppose what I'm trying to say is I sometimes slash often find myself in these environments that say they're trying to be more welcoming of these things, like, you know, yeah, like taking time off for mental health. But then if the leadership aren't doing it themselves, they're just encouraging the rest of us to do it. Is that enough? I don't know where I'm going with this, but did you know what I'm getting to? Like, I'm
yeah. It's like a classic, do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah.
Or like, and they're not really leading by example.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's a tricky one. And I think that's because as well, they are individuals in prey of all of the biases and stigmas against them as well. So you can have the best intentions, but at some point, you also as an individual face that fear of being judged. Also, I think leaders in businesses have tremendous additional pressure on them that we are not even aware of. So I actually do think they probably need the time to rest almost more than us some
this
days.
This is exactly the thing. This is what I'm reflecting over.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen, sometimes I observe something where I feel like sometimes you can track the amount of pressure on someone's shoulders just by the amount of gray hair that they put throughout 1 year. And it's quite impressive sometimes. Or just the bags under their eyes. It's just, sometimes you can just see the pressure that way. And you can see these people are not taking the time off. And I think it's because it's almost like they are sacrificing themselves for the rest of the employees to like have that time off, and they don't take it as well. Like, sometimes I think there might be a bit of that, of like, we are leading the ship so that the ship can actually have like a more pleasant journey, I guess, if you know what I mean. So I think sometimes there might be a bit of that. I do think they are in prey of many, many more challenges and pressures that we are not always sometimes aware of, which makes taking time off a lot more difficult. I think, obviously, I'm talking about like C-suite type of level and all that. I think you can put tremendous amount of hours into those kind of jobs, and I think it's extremely demanding in some companies. So I think sometimes taking the time off, it might feel even unrealistic because there's so much to do and there's so much relying on you as well. So I think you feel the pressure to keep the thing together. But again, it goes back to, you know, that perception of rest not being as important as the hustle and not prioritizing slowing down a bit and periods of reflection and prioritizing health, whether it's mental or physical. I think it's just, yeah, comes from a long history of just us not prioritizing those things and making them actually a bad thing.
Yeah. I think you're right on all those points. There are a lot of pressures that we're not aware of, and I don't think it's right of, and not that I'm trying to pin it on individual leaders. It's more of a cultural thing, and that it's a long way to go. And especially if you rise through the ranks to that level of leadership, you absorb and follow what leaders before you have done, and it's difficult to pave the way for a new approach to this, especially if, you know, your performance hinges on the extent to which you perform and deliver. And of course, I trust that most leaders also have the interest of their team in mind, and like you say, they kind of want to protect their team's mental well-being and it, almost above their own, not to that extent, but let their team rest instead of themselves sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there is a thing of like you expect your manager to be, or your director, or your leadership team to be an umbrella for their department, right? Mm. And that is something that we talk about, like being an umbrella, and that means shielding your team from the rain. But that means that you're the umbrella; you're the one taking all that rain at some point. Who's shielding you? I don't know. But that's also why leadership positions are really difficult. And they're not for everyone as well. I don't know if there's a particular answer to that one. But I think it comes from just generally culturally in our society as well. Around the more we prioritize this thing as being normal, and the more you'll see leaders as well embracing them, I think, because it will be more acceptable. All right, so I think this concludes our chat on mental health at work, and I hope this was helpful and that you've, I guess, recognized yourself a little bit in our struggles. We will be back in 2 weeks for another episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at Design Cafe. We are also on LinkedIn, where you can find us on Design Cafe, and we have a website, designcafe.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you soon.